the fact that we were all young and naive in a good way is what really helped. Because what we were doing was we understood and we believed, and that was a fact, that we had the city in our hands. So we would feel empowered to go to the mayor and sit down with the mayor, and eventually I became like advisor to the mayor and was like 14, 15, just because we didn't believe that this was something impossible, and tell them what we needed. And we felt empowered to sit down with many sides of the executive government of the city and tell them exactly what we needed. And then go to the chamber of deputies of the city and tell them the laws that we had to approve to actually move things forward. So if I gave young Luisa the skills that I have now, I would also pass the things we believe that make some of those things impossible, and that would not work.
In Youth We Trust sits down with successful entrepreneurs, business leaders, educators, and others from around the world. We spotlight how individuals and organizations are shaping a better world, directly or indirectly, for the coming generations through their focus on sustainability, equity, education, and more to empower young people to create the future they deserve. And now, in Youth We Trust.
Luisa, welcome to the podcast In Youth We Trust.
Bom dia. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So I would really love to get stuck in straight away. And if you allow me, let me take you back to your younger self and ask you a question. You know, you know, Lumi runs quests where we are giving young people a chance to solve problems that are of great importance to the world. When you were young, what is the problem that you saw around you and that you really wanted to solve? And what would have your quest been?
Well, this is a hard question because I could give you a very long list. When I was young, from about the age of 12, I had the opportunity to get involved on social organization focused on solving social problems. And I was very lucky to live in a small city in Brazil. So it wasn't like small, and was big enough to have challenges to solve, but it's small enough to allow us to explore and treat that as it was kind of like our own lab of problem solving kind of environment. And at that time, it was very, we had multiple focuses, but the ones that really drove me was to look at poor and challenging parts of the city and the whole environment and how to solve them all together by engaging the local community with the private and public sector in the city. So we have done quite a lot of that, including through education, as well as the environmental related issues, and providing like just basic services to those 1,000 to 2,000 people communities.
So, and which city was that?
It's a very hard name to pronounce. It's a city in Brazil, in the state of São Paulo, called Guaratinguetá.
Oh, Guaratinguetá.
Okay, wow. You're good.
Well, I've spent 5 years in that country. I better know some of it at least, even if it, I haven't been to that city. And how did that journey evolve for you? So when you got involved in serving the less privileged people in your city?
It started in a funny way. And like just a few factors just led me to join this group. As I mentioned, it started when I was 12. And then I really kind of found my group right there and found something that really made sense to me from an early age. That led me to just become a youth leader in the country, from like leading the local organization to doing something more regional, until getting and becoming the national president of like 20,000 people. So that was not planned, but a journey that I really enjoyed. And as I mentioned, the focus were, we had multiple focuses from developing the leadership from the people that were part of this organization to solving social challenges, to environmental challenges, among other things. I'm not sure if I answered your question, actually.
Well, you know, social challenges and environmental challenges, and which of these two things was bigger for people around you at that time?
I think they are very intertwined, right? Especially when you think about Brazil. And the one of the things we tried to focus on was aligning the environmental with the social and always considering the economic development. And we were really able by doing that to change whole communities. Meaning, for example, there was one specific community that was very disconnected from the city. The city is very big, very large, although it has only 120,000 people. So this community was very isolated, meaning that they had no water supply, they had no sanitation, they had no schools, they had no transportation. And they didn't have the people that were empowered enough to solve the challenges themselves. We found them when we were like 12, 13. And we started because I think the key thing there was we were young enough to not understand that some things were considered impossible. So we would just do it. So we would get to this community that was probably like 1 hour, 40 minutes away, and understand their issues. We started from the education side of things. So how could we educate those people, young people and the older ones, to empower them and to bring them opportunities that they didn't have before? So for the youth, we managed to work with the city hall to bring a small school and actually to build a building where they could be based. And we started also to bringing courses to educate the adults and give them economic activities, such as like baking and some other kind of like manual work. But we realized then that one challenge was that they didn't have access to the bigger part of the city. So it was really hard for them to connect, and some people would walk for hours to get there. So we started working with another part of the city management and with the mayor's office to bring transportation to them. So they didn't have like bus lines or things like that. And then we started realizing like other problems and working on them to a point that this community has completely changed.
So you're literally shaping a city, okay?
Yeah.
And I mean, this is incredible. Were you studying in a school at the time, or was this becoming a full-time job?
No, we were studying.
And
the school, yeah. So the school, in a nice way, kind of became part of that. We were about 20 to 30 people at that time. So this was one of the many things we were doing, but that was just like one that is very close to the heart of everyone that was involved. And we started kind of, most people were from the same school. So the school owner really enjoyed what we were doing, and we were doing activities to raise money or to raise food or other things at the school that we could bring to this community and to other communities that we were helping at the time.
So if you have to go back to that younger self, what is that one skill that you would lend to her that you did not have at that time?
Honestly, like, I can't think of anything. Of course, like, there are skills from my life now that I really didn't have at that time. But I think the fact that we were all young and naive in a good way is what really helped. Because what we were doing was, we understood and we believed, and that was a fact, that we had the city in our hands. So we would feel empowered to go to the mayor and sit down with the mayor. And eventually, like, we and I became like advisor to the mayor, and was like 14, 15, just because we didn't believe that this was something impossible, and tell them what we needed. And we felt empowered to sit down with many sides of the executive government of the city and tell them exactly what we needed. And then go to the what is like the Chamber of Deputies of the city and tell them the laws that we had to approve to actually move things forward. And the same thing to the private sector. We just knock on people's doors and tell them what and how much money we needed with a piece of paper that we assume was like the official request. And that would happen. So if I gave the young Louisa the skills that I have now, I would also pass the things we believe that make some of those things impossible, and that would not work.
That's such a good point. See, this is what you're talking about is the essence of Lumi. I mean, I actually think your statement, we were young enough to not understand that some of the things were impossible. This is something that I think I'll keep with me, because this is really what happens when we are working with young people as young as 10. They think that they can change the world and their ideas matter. And now you're talking about the fact that as an adult, we tend to analyze far too much and come up with reasons as to why we don't or can't do something. So tell me one thing, Louisa, how has your work kind of traveled as you've moved on? Like, has the involvement of young people in the city or in the region or even in parts of Brazil been institutionalized? Because that's what I see missing in the world.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word institutionalized, because I think that this is in some ways the opposite of what made it work. But I would say, like, I would focus more on the like inspiring side of things.
Inspiration.
And a
yeah.
lot of what we have done, not only me, like everyone that was with me at that time has done, was following the path of other people that came before us. So it wasn't like something that was completely new. Of course, it was an improved version, but inspired by others. And that followed through. So right after I left the city, a lot of people were continuing this work. And continued this work and pushing into today. One thing that's interesting is that it wasn't only the young people that we inspired. We also inspired the adults in that community to understand that things could be done. And one of them that started playing a role of more the community leader, he actually became a politician in the city that was trying to replicate the model that we created at that time to other places.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
And has that started to travel beyond Brazil in some way?
Not because of us. I think, and it's interesting that the older I get, the more I see how powerful that was. I don't think that was an understanding of us back then. So it was, everyone that was doing this because we really believed and we really enjoyed, and we didn't really think about the limitations. But we never tried to make a name out of it.
This episode is brought to you by Lumi.network. We're on a mission to help the next generation prepare to take on the world. Our AI-augmented platform runs quests that help 10 to 25-year-olds shape their future by developing AI, entrepreneurship, and design thinking skills to solve the most pressing business and social issues. If you or your organization wants to impact the next generation positively, we'd love to talk to you. To learn more, visit lumi.network.
You are someone who did all of that work, social and environmental, and now that you have converted that into your profession, that's also rare. How are you continuing some of the work, and what are you doing today?
I think one thing that's very important to mention is, especially, so I come from Brazil, a country where like the quality of education is not one of our main strengths. And now I'm very lucky to have had the opportunities to just do the work that I do, and I'm now based in London. But this is not a common path, because the quality of the education, especially when you do all of that in an emerging market, it's usually not enough to compete with the people that have had their educations in some of the biggest schools and the best schools in the world. So what really brought me here isn't really the education that I had or the formal education that I had. That was important to give me a foundation, but not enough to compete with others or to just put me in a position to just work side by side with people that came from some of the best schools. What prepared me to be here was exactly the work that I did beyond school. Not only because we're solving problems, but because by solving problems, we were developing skills that put us, and many of us that worked together at that time, like in a position to become much more prepared than the people around us. So while solving those problems, we were developing our leadership skills and actively working to develop our leadership skills. We were developing our communication skills, problem solving, and many other things from the age of like 12, some people from the age of 10, being really immersed into that. That was almost like a professional activity. So that was fundamental for me and to bring me where I am today.
And talk to us a little bit more about what kind of work are you doing today?
So now I work for Bloomberg Enea for 9 years now, 9 years tomorrow, actually, which is a research side of Bloomberg that focuses on the technologies and solutions and all the key sectors for a low carbon future. We provide research, and at Bloomberg NF, or BNF as we call it, I lead some of the research teams that look at how to implement the transition across multiple sectors and technologies with a country or regional or cross-country focus.
Okay, and outside of Bloomberg, you are heavily into climate action. So tell us a little bit more about how you are involved in that. And, you know, the one aspect of that is, you know, COP30, which is in 2025, is going to be in Brazil. So how are you involved and what is your vision for that?
It's all of that is very aligned to my work and very kind of like part of the work that I do for Bloomberg. As we work with information and we're leading like research and data provider on the transition to a low carbon future, a lot of what I do is to bring that forward and to bring that to the decision makers to help them make better informed decisions. I also run from Bloomberg some of ours and most of ours public facing projects that really intend to make a lot of this information that's only available to clients public, to really support investors, developers, policymakers, to just simplify their search for solutions and make better informed decisions moving forward. So I'm very present at most of the COPs or all COPs since a few years ago. And I'm also during UN General Assembly Week, and other big international events, really aiming to bring information that can help the people that are going to and are making the decisions that will change and impact the whole world and lives of all individuals. So it's all focused on information and bringing this information forward.
And what is your view on events such as COP? Do you think that the information and the insights you're providing is leading to tangible action?
So I think what we do is extremely impactful. I think we have information and data that nobody else does. And we also managed to communicate that in a way that nobody else does. In spite of when we see a direct impact, by communicating that to the whole world, by having access to the most senior people that are actually making these decisions, I believe that we kind of get this stuck in their heads and help them make the right decisions. Things are always slower than they should be. But I do believe that by influencing the private sector as we do, we also get things moving forward a little bit faster. So we work a lot with the banks, asset managers. We work a lot with the private investors and developers that are increasingly playing a more important role in the transition to a low carbon future.
It's interesting. You know, the one thing that I find missing, Louisa, in this, and this is just a subjective opinion, is that the whole topic of climate still feels a bit too scientific. Like, you know, when people say we're going to cross the 1.5 degree threshold, an average person doesn't relate to it. They're not able to really grapple or grasp the enormity of the challenge that we are facing. So how are you using your access and the information that you have that nobody else does to solve that problem? Or can you?
I fully agree, 100%. That's something I've been thinking more and more. I still don't have a good answer for this question, but this is something I hope I will have at some point soon. So how communicate to the normal people? A lot of this has been, and some of the things I'm doing with Brazil is collaborating with people that do reach this audience, especially as we build to COP 30 end of next year. But I think there is work to be done in that front yet. But I do believe it's important, when we're talking about climate change, it's important to understand that every single person impacted is impacted by that. So if we only try to reach the decision makers and not the normal people, which is the majority of the world, then I don't believe we're going to get really far.
That's true. Are you also focusing on young people in some way in your work, directly or indirectly?
Not directly, unfortunately, but indirectly. I feel that, so as we look at, when I look at how COPs have progressed in terms of audience, we see the numbers getting bigger. And this is just an example. But the audience is also getting more varied. What I find interesting on my presence, so when I go to COPs, I tend to speak at like a lot, like a big number of events with like a very varied audience. A lot of this audience is young people. And what I find interesting is that when I'm speaking, and I think they kind of, I'm usually the youngest person on the stage, and many times the only female one, especially young women, they will always come and talk to me. So I think the role of touching on these topics and indirectly influencing people is important. And the other thing I've been trying to do is like mentor more people that reach out to me asking for help to understand their direction. And this is increasing, this is growing very, like growing a lot, like every month. So I think the impact is getting more and more clear, and what we can do is also getting more clear.
And you talked about the gender point, you know, it's an interesting one. Do you think that's an issue when it comes to topics like climate, that there's not enough gender representation?
I think less on climate and more when we look at energy sector, for example. But the number of women prepared for and interest on doing the work is growing quite a lot. And I must say, like, women are really prepared. So I think that's changing. Like when I started on my current job 9 years ago, I would be the only woman at events and the only woman at stage when talking about energy specifically. And that's not the case anymore, thankfully. And as I expanded more into climate beyond energy itself, I see a very different picture as well, which is good. I think like women in general tend to be very passionate about that. And I think tend to play or are able to play a very important role in this transition.
Well, they surely should. It's Mother Nature we're talking about, after all, no? Yeah. So let's look at the future. You know, I always kind of towards the end of a discussion tend to ask my guests, what is their prediction for the future based on where they see the world today and how, and the level of change that they're able to either affect or witness around them. So if you fast forward to 2040, what will the world look like?
Well, I can bring to you many scenarios based on data, right? I can tell you multiple numbers. I can tell you multiple pathways based on directions that we go. For me, every answer goes back to the people, right? So it's a lot about how the technology evolves. It's a lot about how the financing flows evolve. But all of that at the end is based on what people want, right? So influencing people to make the right choices and find solutions to solve now a problem that we know we are facing and we will increasingly facing is what matters. So, and it's not going to be done by repeating what we have been doing so far. So it's like, no matter like how many scenarios we have, it's always going to be about choices that people make. The individuals, the decision makers from a public sector, from a private sector. So for me, that's the main point now, right? Like how we can change people's mindsets to make sure that they move towards the best possible scenario.
And what is the best possible scenario?
The best possible scenario is like directing and setting the policies, the investment flows and the technologies development in a trajectory that will ensure that we limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius, or hopefully, but probably unlikely, 1.5. It's like about individual choices. And individual choices are extremely impactful, but without the right policies and the right solutions at scale, they won't solve the problem by itself. So we need the individual mindset to change beyond their individual actions, but to change, to push for the right measures. For example, on cars, if you live in a place where you mostly have diesel and gasoline cars, and you need a car, what you do is going to be impactful, but it's not going to solve the problem. What you need beyond that is the government to implement the policies and the investors to implement the financing mechanisms that will allow you to make better choices with the right technology and the right solution. Right.
That's right.
And yeah, that could be an electric car, that could be a like biofuels car, that could be using public transportation, but those need to be available, right?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think it's safe to end this one on the very note where we started. Ultimately, real change will happen if people like you or people on the ground, local people, understand and do something. And there are also catalysts, human catalysts, who inspire people and show them the way, right? So that way, people, you know, this is really where I have a huge amount of faith in young people doing it, because they don't go by what's impossible, and they think solutions, not problems. I really enjoyed talking to you, Louisa. Thank you so much for some pretty articulate responses to very complex questions I was trying to ask from time to time. Thank you so much. And, you know, I look forward to following your work and also to working with you, hopefully, at some point.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here today.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have a story or someone you know does, please recommend them to us by email at hello@lumi.network. We'll see you next time on In Youth We Trust.